Welcome to Politics Ohio on WISO.org and at NPR One. I'm Jerry Kenney. Since taking office, President Donald Trump has signed more than two dozen executive orders. Some have provoked mass protests across the U.S., including Trump's order on immigration. With so much talk about executive orders in the news, we thought it was a good opportunity to ask, what are executive orders anyway, and how do they work? This week, we spoke with University of Dayton Assistant Professor of Political Science, Christopher Devine. Devine says presidential executive orders are often misunderstood.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing that's often misunderstood. Often people not only think, but actually become enraged because they believe that the president, through an executive order, is exercising a legislative power. The president is unilaterally making law. He has no power to do that. Article 1 of the Constitution exclusively vests the legislative power, that is the lawmaking power, with the Congress. The president, of course, has a role in signing off on legislation unless there's a veto and then an override. But most of the time, the president has some role, but it's not the driving role to actually create law. What the president can do as executive, executing the laws that Congress has passed, is to issue directives to federal agencies. Remember, Congress makes laws, like if you think of the Affordable Care Act or other ones, but they don't actually conduct the oversight to make sure that's being implemented correctly, or to tell, let's say, the Department of Health and Human Services how exactly to carry out and, you know, verify compliance with a given law. So the president oversees that. In the course of doing so, the president has long been recognized as having a role, going all back to the earliest presidential administrations. Has a role in telling the executive branch agencies that he has oversight over how to implement those laws. That's what executive orders are. And oftentimes executive orders are issued for really non-controversial issues. They could have to do with holidays or some mundane things like that. But especially in more recent years, we see executive orders being used for really big things, like President Obama's executive order on immigration that didn't give full legal status, didn't give citizenship, because only Congress can do that, but gave legal protections to people who are not legal immigrants to the country, to 5 million in that case. So they can be used for larger things.
Last night, the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals kept President Trump's travel ban on hold. Let's talk about that move by the courts.
So, interesting move by the court. Not totally a surprise, given the reputation of the Ninth Circuit as being one of the more liberal courts, circuit courts in the country. But there was some question about how this would all turn out. There are still some questions about how it'll turn out, I should say. But this all started with a district court ruling that took place, was it last week, that issued a temporary restraining order to basically hold off on enforcing the executive order regarding refugees and visitation from seven countries in the Middle East and North Africa. That was upheld by the ruling yesterday by the Ninth Circuit, which means that for the time being, that executive order is not in force. And where it goes from here depends on how the Trump administration wants to follow up on it. They could appeal this directly to the Supreme Court, and that could happen relatively quickly, or they could make changes to the executive order, kind of start over there. They could go back to the district court and start over other parts of the process. But where we are right now is that the courts have not ruled on the merits of the case for the time being. They're ruling on whether this would be likely to succeed going forward if the Trump administration were to appeal this to the Supreme Court.
With the three branches of government, what is to say which federal body makes the final decision if they're all equal?
That's a very good question. If you actually look at what's in the Constitution, there's really nothing that settles this question directly. Article 3, which deals with the power of the judicial branch, does not say that the courts, the Supreme Court or otherwise, has ultimate say over what is or is not constitutional. However, we have a tradition in this country that's developed since really 1803, the Marbury versus Madison case, where the court asserted the power to review legislation, acts of government, to determine whether they are consistent with the Constitution, and if they are not consistent with the Constitution, the court can strike that law down or that action of government down. That's something that's just been accepted in our country for some time, and for that matter, there's some support for that logically, or even going back to the Federalist Papers that helped to explain what was in the Constitution and to justify that. So there's a long tradition of this in the country, but it is important to note that really, ultimately, the power of the courts to have final say
on what is or is not constitutional, that rests on the perceived legitimacy of the court. And if people wanted to shift that responsibility elsewhere because they were dissatisfied with the outcomes of court rulings, I'm not saying that's likely, but there's at least nothing directly in the Constitution to prohibit that from happening.
Chris Devine is Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Dayton. Chris, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Jerry. It's good to be here.
You've been listening to Politics Ohio from WYSO. Find more episodes at WYSO.org. There you can subscribe to our podcast, which is also available on iTunes and Google Play.